certainly good to be here tonight and see each of you out. Appreciate your attendance. Greg asked me if there was a song that would fit with the sermon in any way, and I asked him to lead that one. Because what we're trying to do this week is tell the story of the Old Testament, but also draw the analogies as to how we can apply some of those stories to our lives. And the title of that song, On Jordan's Stormy Banks I Stand, is an analogy to Joshua and the children of Israel as they stood on the banks of the Jordan River ready to cross over and take the promised land, which is part of the story that we're going to tell tonight. So as we've been going through this week, we've been trying to tell the story of the Old Testament. We've divided it into these six sermons. Sunday night we talked about the conception of God's people and God's people as a family. It was a family at that time. God spoke to the patriarchs. He gave the patriarchs instructions. Many of them didn't follow. They fell into idolatry. And he called Abraham out of a world of idolatry. He called him to leave his homeland, to follow him, and he would promise him a large inheritance and that his seed after him would be as many as the stars in the sky. So God called a family out of idolatry by one man, Abraham. From that family came the Israelite nation. Abraham gave birth to Isaac. Isaac gave birth to Jacob, who became Israel. And Israel fathered the Israelite nation. Now, the Israelite nation ended up in Egypt. We covered this again the first night. They ended up in Egypt because Joshua, one of the 12 children of Jacob, was sold into slavery into Egypt. While he was in Egypt, he was in Potiphar's house. His wife came up with a story on him, had him thrown into prison. While he was in prison, he interpreted dreams, and eventually interpreted dreams for the Pharaoh. The Pharaoh had dreams that Joshua interpreted, and he raised Joshua up to power, put him second in charge over Egypt. Then there came the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. During the 7 years of famine, Israel and his family came to live in Egypt. Jacob dies, Joshua dies, and the family of Israel is now left in Egypt. The family grows, the family multiplies to the point where they are large enough to be their own nation. And then God brings them out of Egypt through the 10 great plagues. So what he's done is he's established a family. He's brought the family into Egypt. He's got the family in Egypt, the family grows, and now he's ready to use a nation to impact the world. The nation to make a statement that there is one true God, something that we're going to keep coming around to throughout our sermon tonight. So he brought them out of Egypt through the 10 great plagues. Moses led them to the promised land. They sent 12 spies into the promised land to search out the land, and they came back and said it was a beautiful land, truly flowing with milk and honey. 10 of them said the people of the land were too great, that we could not take the land. They're too strong. We can't defeat them. 2 of them said they could. Those two were Joshua and Caleb. They were the only two that said, God is on our side. We can take the land. But the people followed the other 10. And so God sent them out into the wilderness to wander for 40 years. While they were in the wilderness, Moses, at one time the people were thirsty, God told him to strike the rock. The rock brought forth water. The people began to murmur and complain, and they worried Moses, and God told Moses to speak to the rock. Well, this time Moses struck the rock again, and it brought forth water. And because of that, Moses was not able to go into the promised land. So there had to be another leader brought forth to bring the people into the promised land, to conquer the promised land, and to take the inheritance that God had promised to them. And that man was Joshua. God gave Joshua charge over his people after the death of Moses. And this is where we are in our timeline tonight. Again, this is just relative, but it gives you an idea, this being the creation and this being Christ, about what time period that we're covering tonight. We're going to briefly talk about Joshua up to the judges. Joshua parted the waters of the Jordan. The people crossed over the Jordan River. They immediately held a Passover. On the other side, they came to Jericho, and they marched around the city of Jericho, and after the seventh day, when they marched 7 times around, the walls came tumbling down. Story that we're all very familiar with. A great showing, again, of God's power. They were brought out by a great showing of power through the plagues. Then they crossed over the Red Sea. Now they're crossing over the Jordan, and now they come in, and they don't even go to battle with the people. They just walk around the city and follow God's commandments, and the walls come tumbling down. So God defeated Jericho for Joshua and the children of Israel. Then they go up against Ai and Bethel. But because of the sin of one man, sin of one man who didn't do what God said to do, there were some people that were killed in the first battle when they went up against Ai. They found it, they removed the sin from the camp, and they went and they took Ai and Bethel. They continued their conquest of the promised land to the time of the story where the sun stood still in the battle of Beth Horon. This is the time when Israel is fighting four or five of the northern kings of the promised land. And Joshua needed more time to complete the battle. And so God made the sun stand still, gave him extra time so that the battle could be in Joshua's favor. So there's three things that God has done to help them to conquer the land. Number one, he parted the waters of the Jordan. Number two, he caused the walls of Jericho to fall down. Number three, he held the sun still for a day so that they could continue and complete the battle that they were in at that time. The land was divided, but the inhabitants were not completely driven out. And that's what God told them to do. He gave them a land, and he said, you've got to get all of the people out of the land, get their gods out, get their idols out, get everything out of the land, because this is supposed to be your land, it's supposed to be pure land, it's supposed to be holy, you're my nation, no other gods, so get all of them out. But they didn't. They took most of the land. There was parts of it that they didn't take. They took most of it, they took control of it, but they spared some of the people. If you will, take a Bible. I don't have this passage up on the screen tonight. But turn to Judges, the second chapter. This brings us up to the beginning of the book of Judges, where we can continue here and learn a few lessons from this time. Judges, the second chapter, beginning with verse 16. And this basically gives you a big overview of what we're going to be looking at tonight. Judges chapter 2, beginning with verse 16. Now, what he's just told them is that because they didn't drive all the inhabitants out of the land, that they would be a thorn in their side. They would be a thorn in the flesh, basically, and that they would give them problems with all of their gods. And when they did oppress them, beginning in verse 16, it says, nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges which delivered them out of the hand of them that spoiled them. And yet they would not hearken to their judges, but they went a-whoring after other gods and bowed themselves unto them. They turned quickly out of the way which their fathers walked in, obeying the commandments of the Lord, but they did not so. And when the Lord raised them up judges, then the Lord was with the judge, and delivered them out of the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For it repented the Lord because of their groaning, by reason of them that oppressed them and vexed them. And it came to pass, when the judge was dead, that they returned and corrupted themselves more than their fathers, and following other gods to serve them and to bow down unto them. They ceased not from their own doings, nor from their stubborn ways. And the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he said, because that this people have transgressed my covenant which I commanded their fathers, and have not hearkened unto my voice, I also will not henceforth drive out any from before them of the nations which Joshua left when he died, that through them I might prove Israel, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk therein as their fathers did keep it or not. Therefore the Lord left the nations without driving them out hastily, neither delivered them into the hand of Joshua. So there were some people that were left. There were some nations that were left, some of the people of the nations that were left. And these people we're going to see rise back to power through the book of Judges and oppress the children of Israel and cause problems. When they were oppressed, God raised up a judge. So this is where we get around to the judges. So far up to this point, the children of Israel had a leader. They had Moses to lead them out of Egypt. They had Joshua to lead them into conquering the Holy Land. And now they were supposed to follow God. They were supposed to have the Holy Land. They're supposed to continue the conquest to complete what Joshua had started, but they didn't. And they have problems because of it. So we'll begin with some lessons of the judges. Othniel, the first judge that we find, story in Judges chapter 3. Mesopotamia came and oppressed Israel for 8 years, but Othniel led the children of Israel to war with the king of Mesopotamia, and he brought back peace to the land. And it says that there was peace in the land for 40 years. And the recurring habit that you're going to see here that was told to us what happened was that every time a judge died, it says that when the judge died, the people went back to following the other gods. And that's what happened. And so then there had to be another judge come on the scene. The second judge is Ehud, again in Judges chapter 3. Now some of these we know more about their stories than others. But Eglon, the king of Moab, called on the Ammonites and the Amalekites to come and help him oppress the children of Israel. They oppressed the land for 18 years. So God raised up Ehud, because the people were crying unto God, as they had in Egypt, and as they do every time through here, when they're oppressed, they cry to God and ask for help. God helps them, and then they leave him. Okay? Unfortunately, I think there's been times when we've each probably followed that pattern ourselves. So God raised up Ehud. Ehud was a left-handed man. Now, why he brings that up, we'll see in just a moment. But Ehud was a left-handed man, and Ehud went in to give tribute to King Eglon on behalf of Israel. And he told him, while he was in there, he said, I have a message for you from the God of Israel. Eglon said, okay, all of my servants leave the room. And he left the room with just him and Ehud, the judge of God. So he came up close to him like he was going to whisper to him. But what Eglon didn't know was that Ehud had made a dagger, set a double-sided dagger, and he had placed it under his clothes on his left thigh. And so what he does is he gets close to him like he's going to whisper, and he secretly reaches in with his left hand, because I imagine the purpose of that is that he would have been expecting it to come from his right hand. But he reached in with his left hand, got the dagger, and he thrust it into his belly. It tells us that Eglon was a fat man. And it says that Ehud thrust it into his belly so much, and I don't mean to be gruesome, but it says that the fat of his flesh covered over the handle, and the dagger went out his back. So that Ehud must have been a fairly mighty man to have been able to, at close range, to have forced that dagger through his body. He left, went out through a porch a different way, locked the door behind him, and Eglon's servants stayed outside. They waited. While they were waiting, Ehud had time to escape. So he escaped, and there was peace in the land for 80 years. But of course, when Ehud died, the people left God again. So God raised up another prophet, Shamgar, who killed 600 Philistines with an ox goad. That's all we know about Shamgar. But the next story continues, and we know a lot more about this one. The story of Deborah and Barak. Now, this is interesting because we don't, you know, a lot of times, unfortunately, it's the general thought that there's not that much for women to do, even though there's a lot for women to do. There's not that many stories, especially in the Old Testament, where women had such a prominent place in God's purpose and his plan and what he did with his people. But he raised up Deborah to relieve the people. What had happened was God delivered them into the hand of Jabin, the king of the Canaanites. We're going to see some of these countries and these peoples come back up more than one time. So the Canaanites now are oppressing the people. And Sisera, and I'm telling you these names because they're important, we're going to come back to them. Sisera was the captain of Jabin's army. So Jabin is the king, Sisera is the captain of the army. And Deborah says she was a prophet, prophetess that judged from underneath a palm tree. So she sat under this tree, and the people came out to her, and she judged among the people when they would bring things to her to judge from. Barak, she called Barak and told him that God wanted him to go up against Sisera, the captain of Jabin's army. He told him that he wanted to go up against Sisera, that he would deliver him into his hands. Now, the reason why they hadn't gone up against him in battle was because it said that he had 900 chariots of iron. And they didn't have any weapons that could defeat a chariot of iron at that point. So she sends Barak into battle, but Barak said, I'm not going to go unless you go with me. So he wanted to make sure that she was serious about this thing. So to make sure she was serious, he said, you go with me. She said, okay, I'm going to go, but I'm going to tell you that the battle and Sisera's death is not going to fall to your hands. It's going to fall to the hands of a woman. And it did. In the battle, Sisera fled, and he fled to a people, the same people that told him that the Israelites were coming. He thought they were a friendly nation. He actually fled into the tent of the wife of the king of that people, to Jael. Jael was the wife of the king of the people that told him that Israel was coming. And while he was there with Jael, he told her, he said, give me something to drink. So she gave him some milk to drink. And then he said, she brought him a blanket, and he laid down to rest. But before he did, he told her, said, when they come and ask if I'm here, tell them that I'm not here. But what she did was, while he was asleep, it said she took a nail and a hammer. This is, again, gross. It's gruesome. I don't mean to turn any stomachs, but she put the nail on his temple, and drove it into his head and pinned his head to the ground through his temples and killed him. And then when the people came and asked, she brought him in and said, here's the man that you were seeking. So again, there was rest in the land, this time for 40 years. But Israel again left God, and God called on a man named Gideon. And what a beautiful story this is, a beautiful story of Gideon. Gideon was a very humble man. He said that he was the least of his family of Manasseh. But God called on him to save the people from the Midianites. They had been oppressed by the Midianites for 7 years. The oppression was so bad, and they were so scared of the Midianites that they moved out of the land and they went and hid in caves. They even built hiding places for their grain and for their food because they were afraid if they found it, they would take their food away. So they hid everything, and they were hiding in caves for 7 years. So God sends Gideon. First, he tells Gideon to destroy the altar of Baal. So he destroys the altar of Baal. And Gideon's father stands up for him. When the people want Gideon to be killed, his father stands up for him and says, why are you going to stand up for Baal? Let Baal stand up for himself. And of course he couldn't. But then Gideon does something interesting. God told him that he wanted to go into battle against the Midianites and the Amalekites. But Gideon says, show me a sign. So he does this thing with the fleece. He says, let me lie a fleece out on the ground, and let there be dew everywhere on the ground except on the fleece. And so it was. There was dew everywhere on the ground except on the fleece. The next day he says, don't be angry with me, but just show me one more sign. This time, let the fleece be wet and the ground be dry. And so he does. And this time the fleece is so wet, he wrung out a lot of water out of that fleece from the dew that fell that evening. But it only fell on the fleece. And so Gideon went into battle. He called people from the different tribes to come in, and about 32,000 men came to go into battle with Gideon. But God said, it's too many people. And the reason why it was too many people was because he knew that if that many went, they would say it was of their own power that they had defeated the Midianites and Amalekites rather than by God's power. So he says, ask them if they're fearful and afraid, and if they are, send them home. 22,000 of them left. Left him with about 10,000 men to go into battle. And God said, it's still too many. So he said, take them down to the river and let them drink water. Those that bring the water up to their mouth and lap it like a dog out of their hand, those are the ones you take into battle. But the ones that get down on their knees and drink the water, they don't go into battle. 300 of them is all the ones that brought the water up to their hand. The significance of that is that they were watching and they were prepared. Even if battle started that moment, they had their head up and they were prepared, but the ones that stooped and put their head down and their knees down, they could have been defeated. And so he takes those 9,700 and sends them away. Gideon and 300 people go up against the Midianites. He divided them into three companies. He gave them pitchers and torches, not even weapons, a pitcher with a torch hidden inside the pitcher. And he says, you go in your company and do as I do. Gideon blew his trumpet, and he said, the sword of the Lord and Gideon and all of the people in the companies, they broke the pitchers and the torches shone, and they chanted, the sword of the Lord and Gideon. And the Midianites and the Amalekites were so afraid that they actually started fighting themselves. And then Gideon and his army pursued them, and they took over. And there was rest in the land for 40 years. Imagine the faith of Gideon. Again, a lot of times in the Old Testament stories, we don't think of them as stories of faith. Until we get over to Hebrews, do we? And then we realize that all of these stories dealt with faith. Then there was Tola, judged for 23 years, and Jair, the judge, for 10 years. I'm sorry, for 22 years. After these two judges died, Israel again fell into idolatry. Again, we see this over and over. This is their pattern. They fell into idolatry again. So God raised up Jephthah. Jephthah was an interesting character because he was despised by his family. His family had actually sent him away. They didn't want him to live with them. They sent him away, and he went out into the wilderness and lived, and raiders, these raider-type people came and lived with him, and it said they would go on these raids, and that was what they did. No doubt this was developing his military skills. God called on Jephthah to save Israel. He promised God, this is sad, he promised God when he went into battle that if God would give him the battle, that he would give him the first thing that came out of the house when he came back home. The first thing that came out of the doors of his house to see him when he got back home, he was going to offer it to God as a burnt sacrifice. He goes into battle, he's victorious, he goes home, and his daughter's so happy to see him, his only child. And she came out the doors to him. And it says he was crushed. And he said, oh, my daughter, you brought such sadness to me. You brought me so low because what I promised to the Lord I can't go back on. And she, listen to her faith, she said, whatever you said you would do, you do it. Whatever it is you're supposed to do to me, you do it. She went with her friends for 2 months to bewail what was going to happen and came back, and it says that he went through with it. And so he offered her as a burnt sacrifice to God because he had promised him that that's what he would do. But he continued to judge Israel for 6 years. And there's three more judges that we don't know as much about. There's Ibzan, who judged for 7 years, Elon for 10 years, and Abdon for 8 years. And then we come around to the story that we're all very familiar with, the story of Samson. Samson was born of an Nazarite vow. His mom had promised that a razor would never touch his head all his days, and he would be given basically superhuman strength, and God would be with him. When he was a young man, he killed a lion with his bare hands. With his bare hands. It says that he tore the lion as you could tear a young goat. I can't imagine the strength that it would take to tear a young goat, to tear it apart, much less a lion. But it says that he killed it with his bare hands. He killed 1,000 men of Judah with the jawbone of a donkey, because they were going to arrest him and turn him over to the Philistines. And he killed 1,000 of them with the jawbone of a donkey. And then there's the story of Delilah. I think this is a sad story that we're all familiar with. He had took a Philistine wife, which from the beginning was a no-no, to take a wife that was not of Israel's descent. But he saw this woman, and he thought she was beautiful, and he took her to be his wife. And that came back to haunt him later. Delilah came to him and asked him, where does your strength come from? Because he had oppressed, and he had fought back the Philistines, and they were afraid of him. They knew they couldn't touch Samson. She asked him, where does your strength come from? And he lied to her 3 times about where his strength came from. Once was just from cords of a bow, from bowstrings, then from fresh ropes, and then from putting his hair into locks. Finally, he told her that if his head was shaved, that he would lose his strength. You know, why did he not learn his lesson? Why did he not learn his lesson? I think he knew what she was doing, and I think he knew that when he told her that his head would be shaved, that they were going to come just like they had the first 3 times. I think there was some pride involved. Because you remember what he said? Remember what Samson said when Delilah said to him the last time? Samson, get up. The Philistines are here. They're going to take you. He says, I'll get up and I will go and loose their ropes and I'll defeat them just like I did before. But he couldn't. He couldn't. Because what was not supposed to happen to him had happened. And so it goes back to the importance of following God. Look at the principles that were laid forth when Achan took the spoils and hid them under his tent. And there were men that died when they first went up against Ai because of his sin. They were sent in the camp, and they had to get that sin out of the camp. And now we see this story, that Samson, even though he had done many wonderful things for God, the one thing God said not to have happen to him, when it happened, God blessed him. Look at the story of Uzzah. He wasn't supposed to touch the ark. When he touched it, what happened? He died, just like God said that he would. And so when God tells us something, he's serious about it. And he means what he says. So the Philistines arrested him. They put his eyes out. He was in prison. But something interesting happened. They brought him out to perform for them. They brought him out to perform in the temple of their God. What do you think he was performing? I read some thoughts on what type of performance it would have been. Some thought it was just performance of his strength. that he was showing his might. We know that his strength had come back because the lock screwed back, and we know the end of the story, that he put his hands on the two pillars that supported the temple, and he pushed them down. The temple fell down, and he killed more in his death than he did in his life. But they brought him out to perform. I wonder how many times they brought him out to perform before he realized, hey, my hair's going back. I have some of my strength back. Maybe God will be with me one more time. One more time, maybe God will be with me in this battle. And God was with him. He pushed down the pillars, and he died. And something around 3,000 Philistines died all in that one act. And he was the last that was listed of the judges. So we see, as we read in Judges, the second chapter, the basic theme that follows through these judges is that the people, they seem to need a leader. When they had someone to lead them, when they had a judge to look out among them, they followed God. When the judge died, they left God. So what are some themes that we can discuss from the book of Judges? One is deliverance. Deliverance. Something that we all need today, don't we? And thank God we have a way to be delivered through Jesus Christ. He is our mediator. He is between us and God, and he delivers us from our sins. And when we cry unto him, like the men cried to Peter, men and brethren, what shall we do? He provides the way. He tells us how to be delivered from our sins. Just like Peter, when he was sinking in the water, and he said, Lord, save me, and he reached down, and he picked him up. When we need a deliverer, when we need to be delivered, God is there for us when we turn to him. We all need deliverance. Sometimes we all need leadership, too. But the important thing that I want to bring out about leadership is that we can be our own leader. We can be our own leader. Now look at the history of the people. As a family, they went into Egypt. They got to be a large number, and they needed a single man to bring them out. So God raised up Moses. They had a leader, one person to look to. Man, they complained against Moses, and they gave him a hard time, didn't they? They gave Moses a real hard time. Moses died, they raised up Joshua. When Joshua died, the people fell away. They didn't do what they were supposed to do. So then they bring up judges. They raise up judges. God's intent was never for there to have to be a head person for his people to follow him. God is supposed to be the head person. No human being is supposed to be the head leader. That's why it's not scriptural today for there to be a pope, for there to be these leaders of these churches that are leading the people, that are making spiritual religious decisions for them, because God is our leader. No man is our leader. It's God. But God had to, he had to raise up leaders for these people, because from this people, from this nation, was going to come the Messiah. So he had to spare that nation until Jesus came. And it was for Jesus that he did all of this. Because when they left him, without them following God to show the rest of the world that there's one God, they didn't have a purpose. And they needed a leader. But we can be our own leader. Now, what do I mean by that? We don't have to have somebody else coaching us to be a Christian. We don't have to have somebody standing over me saying, Brad, do this. Brad, don't do that. Brad, do this. Brad, don't do this. We like that sometimes because it's easier, because then I don't have to make any decisions. And if I don't like something, I can blame it on the other person. Well, they're the ones that told me I couldn't do it, so it's their fault. It's not mine. So we can push the blame off. But if I will be my own leader and I will say to myself, Brad, you need to do what God says because God said to do it. Whether anybody else tells me to do it or not, then I will be pleasing to God. And that's what he's always wanted anyway. He doesn't want to have someone standing over us telling us what to do. Another theme from the book of Judges, worldly influences. They were supposed to get all of the gods of the land, the people of the land, and completely wipe them out, because the purpose of the nation was to show the world that there is one true God. He was the only God. They were not supposed to follow idolatry. They were only supposed to follow him, like the father Abraham did. He believed in one God. And that was their purpose, was to show the world that there was only one God, but they couldn't do it. They didn't get rid of all the worldly influences so that they could shine. And what if they had? What if they had shown? What if they had done what they were supposed to? It would have been quite a different story, wouldn't it? it would have been a very different story. But they didn't. They didn't get rid of the worldly influences. What impact does that have on us today? What if we don't get rid of the influences in our lives? What if we don't get rid of the worldly influences that are around us? What's it going to do to us? It's going to draw us away in ways that we don't realize. We're going to come back to this in just a moment. And finally, the last theme is the theme of the one true God. And I've touched on this already, but the purpose of that nation was to show the world that there is one God, to prepare them for the coming of the Messiah. God called them as a family out of idolatry, out of a world of idolatry. Abraham was not an idolater, but his dad was. And he called Abraham to leave. And they didn't want him to go back. He didn't even want Isaac to go back to get a wife. He sent somebody else to go get Isaac a wife for him. So they were not supposed to go back to the country from which they came out, as we read over in Hebrews about them leaving the country that they came out of. So God called them out. He sent them into Egypt, so that he could again, once they got larger as a nation, he could again call them out of Egypt by his power to show the world that he was the one true God. And for a few years after that, people remembered. They remembered the acts of God. They remembered what he had done, and they were afraid of Israel because of Israel's God. And so it did make an impact on the world around. And it probably would have made a bigger impact if Israel had done what they were supposed to do. But they didn't. They didn't stay true to their God. So what can we take home with us from this? We must accept God's deliverance. And before we accept it, though, we have to realize that we need it. And I think that's something that a lot of people completely miss. A lot of people in the world don't know that they need deliverance. They don't even know that they're in sin. And what I'm afraid of, friends, is that we have not removed some worldly influences to the point that we don't know that we need to be delivered from a few things too. Because we live in a very material world. We live in a very money-driven world, a very physical world, a world that's pushed and driven by money, by sex, by image, by greed, and it influences us. And sometimes we become callous to these things. I know a lot of y'all probably heard me tell this example before, but there was a story, a research study done, and got a group of adults together that claimed to be Christians and had them to watch 1 hour of the TV show Friends. And they were supposed to write down every time that there was a sexual reference or sexual joke made in the show Friends. The average was around 14, but there was somewhere between 30 and 50 references. And they didn't see them. They didn't notice it because they were probably laughing at the jokes. And they didn't notice the sin that was in that TV show. And Satan uses these things to callous us to sin and to the influences of the world around us. So we have to be careful. We have to look at our lives and ask ourselves, is there something in my life that I need to be delivered from? That I need deliverance of God? And of course, his deliverance only comes through Jesus Christ. And we recognize that we need him, that we must serve him, that we must live for God, that we must remove all the worldly influences, and we must be a servant of God by choice. Serving God is something that we have to do by a daily choice. It's not a once-in-a-lifetime decision. It's an everyday decision. It's not something that we do as part of a routine, because routines change. It can be part of our routine, but we shouldn't only serve him by that routine. What I mean by that is, let's say you have a habit of getting up every morning studying your Bible. That's great. You need to have that habit. But what if your routine changes, and suddenly, let's say you're working late, or maybe you get put on night shift, and now you're not getting up in the morning. When you wake up, now it's 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Are you going to start your afternoon activities, or are you going to start it with what you would have started your day with before, with your Bible study with God? See, routines change. Habits change. Environments change. We can't serve him as part of our environment, but the environment helps. We need to put ourselves in a good environment. We need to have good routines, but we've got to always let it be that every day when I wake up, today I'm going to serve God because today I choose to serve God. Not because it's my habit to get up and read the Bible, not because it's my routine, but because today I choose to get up and serve God. And I'm going to choose to do it today, and whatever God's instructed me to do, if I see an opportunity, I'm going to try to take it to serve him, to do good. If I see sin, I'm going to try to remove it. See, what the people did of what Israel did, but they didn't do that. They only served God when somebody was over them telling them to serve God, when their environment was set up to serve God. And it follows that pattern all the way through the king. When they had a good king, they served God. When they had a bad king, they didn't. The people went wherever their leader went. God wants us to let him be our leader. And that's what I mean by serving God by choice, not because someone is standing over us telling us to do that, or because our habits or our routine tells us to do it, or because our environment tells us to do it, but because we choose to serve God. And we have to eliminate the worldly influences. I've already touched on these, but it's so important that we look at the things that we allow ourselves to be exposed to. The TV shows, the songs that we listen to on the radio. There's some good songs. There's some songs that are fun to listen to, songs fun to sing along with. But what you got to be careful of is that you don't end up singing along with the bad songs too, because they get stuck in your mind. One of the worst ones that got stuck in my mind right after it came out, because it was a catchy tune, was the Toby Keith song about the angry American. And that's not a very nice song if you get right down to it. But that one gets stuck in your head along with lots of other ones. And then you got to think, how am I going to keep this song out of my head? Because y'all know what it's like when something just keeps rolling over and over and over. You have to replace it with something else. So we have to be careful about the things that we allow ourselves to feed on. So let's ask yourself this. You know, many of us don't have much spare time. But what do you do with what time you call your spare time? Let's say you've got 30 minutes. You've got a break somehow. You have a break in your day. What are you going to do with that 30 minutes? You're going to sit down and kick back and turn on the TV and see what you can watch? That's okay. There's nothing simple about that. But what are you going to watch? You're going to watch something educational? You're going to watch something funny? You're going to watch something that might have some of these worldly influences in it? We have to be careful, because it's all out there and it's catchy. It's catchy. Sometimes the worldly influences are a lot catchier, more catchy, whichever one it is, than the Discovery Channel shows, the educational shows, the shows that we can maybe learn something from that would be of benefit at some point in our lives. We have to be careful about the things that we choose to meditate on. But you remember what God told Joshua? I love that first or second chapter of Joshua, where God gave him the charge. He told him about two or three times to be strong and of good courage, and to meditate on his law both day and night. And David said it in Psalms, the first chapter, that the man of God will meditate on the law of the Lord, and then that's where his delight will be both day and night. But if we allow ourselves to be influenced by the world, and we allow ourselves to get wrapped up in some of these things around us, we'll end up meditating on those things rather than meditating on the Word of God. So we need to be careful and remove worldly influences. But we have to do more than remove them, don't we? We have to replace them with God. If we're going to decide that maybe I don't need to listen to some of the songs on the radio, you can buy the Bible on CD now. And you can listen to the Bible while you're going down the road instead of listening to the songs on the radio. Or you can listen to sermons. Debbie and them have a website with lots of sermon recordings on it, where you can download sermons. And there's another one from the West Broad Street congregation where you can download sermons from revivals and listen to them. So there's things that we can feed on in our idle time of traveling down the road or wherever it might be that is beneficial, rather than just killing time, as the song says. I like the Clint Black song, No Time to Kill. Do we really have time to kill? Do we? Let's remove all the worldly influences from our lives so that we don't repeat the pattern that we see in the Judges. Finally, the purpose of your life is to show the world that there is one God, and that his deliverer is Jesus Christ. The mediator between us and him is Jesus Christ. So that when somebody asks you, why do you not listen to these songs on the radio? Why do you not watch these TV shows? Why do you do this boring stuff like listen to the Bible? Why do you listen to sermons? That's what Sunday's for, isn't it? Why do you listen to a sermon during the week? Because I believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Because God is my God, and he's the one that I'm going to follow. And so we choose to follow God so that by our life by the simple fact that we are alive. We don't have to go up to the top step of the courthouse and proclaim it and wear a sign and stand on the side of the road that says, I am a Christian, I believe in God. Just the simple things that we do in our lives will tell other people. We'll go out to lunch with coworkers, bow your head and off the face. Not as a show. It doesn't have anything to do with them being there. It has something to do with you and God. That you want to be thankful to God. And what do the other people see? They see you, and they see your relationship with God. And it might cause them to ask questions. They ask you, what are you doing at night over the summer? Well, I'm going to church. Every night? Yeah, man, we've got a lot of church to go to over the summer. We've got a lot of revivals that we get to go to. Well, wouldn't you rather do something else? No. Where else is there better to be than with our brothers and sisters in Christ? And so by our life, by our decisions, by the things that we do, we show the world that we believe, we still believe that there's one true God. It's more than just acknowledging it, it's living it. So the judges and the story through the judges, it's beautiful stories of deliverance. It's sad stories of drifting away. But it's things that we need to look at our lives and make sure that we're not doing the same thing. Now we'll continue tomorrow night with our story of God and man, with the first three kings, story of Saul, David, and Solomon. And so what the people have done, they look around them at all the other nations, God's raised up judges to deliver them, and then they fall away, and there's a judge, and they fall away, and they say, you know what, we want to be like everybody else. We want a king. They'd already tried to set up kings among them. They tried to set up Gideon as their king. God didn't want kings at that point. And finally, he allowed them to have a king, so he raised up Saul to lead the people. So we're going to start the story with the kings tomorrow night to continue the story of God and man. We'll continue Thursday night with the divided kingdoms, and we'll finish Friday night with the lessons from captivity. So again, we appreciate your attendance. We hope that going back through these stories, it reminds you of things that you've heard all your life and maybe reminds you of how it all fits together and the importance of it all and the importance of it in our life. Because there's so many references in the New Testament to the Old Testament. There's four of these judges tonight that are listed in the Hall of Fame of Faith in the book of Hebrews. And I'll try to name them, but I know I'll forget one. I know it's Gideon, and Barak, and Jephthah, and I can't remember the fourth one. I'll look it up after. But there was four of them that were mentioned. And it mentions them at the point where he gets around and he says, time would not allow me to tell of the stories of Gideon and Barak and Jephthah and whomever the other one was. And he mentions David also and how they did all of these wonderful things through faith. And the point of that whole chapter is to show us what our faith is supposed to be like. So that's the importance of studying these stories and looking at the overall picture of the story of the Old Testament. And how many ways, in principle, God expects the same thing from us today that he's always expected of his people. To be strong, to be courageous, meditate on his word every day, both day and night. And look to him as our leader. So it's our prayer that we all are doing all of these things. If there's any way that we can be of assistance tonight through the gospel call to become a Christian, we'd be glad to assist you in baptism. If you have become a member of the church and you want to renew that commitment to God, or you'd just like for us to pray for you, we'll be glad to help in either way while we stand and sing. 126.